Robert, these floods in Pakistan, and they're incredible floods, are providing all kinds of problems there. Kind of tell us what the real issue is here.
Well, first of all, you have to remember Pakistan itself is sort of hobbling along, even without floods or wars or any other problems. It's a very populous country, and they've got their own internal conflicts with people trying to break away from the government. So when these floods hit, obviously it puts extreme stress on the country. And we were tracking the war last year. You remember when the Pakistani army went into Swat and various regions to root out the Taliban, and they displaced hundreds of thousands of people. Well, the thing that was fascinating was that the Taliban and the fundamentalist groups used that chaos to recruit more people. And we saw some very specific examples of how these religious groups would have cleaner camps, that have better food, that actually go out and meet people on the road, and, you know, wouldn't make them have to walk all the way to a camp to give them medical care, food, water, things like that. And then, of course, when they were in their areas within the camps or their own camps, they would proselytize. And, of course, in those camps you have a lot of people that aren't earning money. They're desperate. They're angry. They're angry at their government. And they become the recruiting arena for these groups to go into Afghanistan and fight, or actually to fight the Pakistani government. So it's a very, very good timing for this recruiting.
Could the government of Pakistan crumble?
Well, there's an argument there that there is really no government. You know, the tribal areas that you keep reading about technically aren't even controlled by the Pakistani government. They have their own sort of independent situation, but the actual country itself is chopped into chunks, like Balochistan and Sindh. So, yes, there is a government. It tends to be a military government, and it tends to be somewhat of a draconian government. But I don't think that Pakistan is that cohesive a country anyways. You know, it's basically what's left over of Islamic India in 1947. So it was kind of kludged together to begin with.
What would Gandhi be doing if he were alive today?
Well, he wouldn't be walking through Pakistan. No, it's a wonderful country in that the people, when you meet them individually, are wonderful people. But when you look at the systems, you know, the government is very corrupt. The military runs that country. And there's massive divisions between different ethnic groups and different regions. So it's an unusual, you know, you have to remember the two countries, of course, both formed by either the British or the UN, that were created in 1947, are sort of the focal point of our problems these days, Israel and Pakistan. Both are nuclear powers, both have long-standing conflicts. So it's interesting that we're still dealing with problems from 60 years ago.
Yeah, well, that's true. Has the stage been set, in your opinion, for a possible World War III?
Well, I think we're kind of in it. I mean, you know, We look at it as the old European wars where you dig two trenches and you put people in them and you throw things at each other.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're doing the same thing. I mean, if you go to Iraq and Afghanistan, we live in crusader castles. We live in these huge fortified cities, instant cities, almost like old castles that you see in the Middle East. And we drive out in these armored vehicles, and we're almost like space aliens. So I would tend to think that we are locked in a war between, let's just to simplify it, you know, the Third World and the First World.
And how long does that continue? Forever?
Well, I mean, go back to the Dark Ages, whatever, where there were civilized city-states and there was the distance in between those city-states. And the world is a rapidly devolving place, and many places are safe, but I have to say that there's such a separation of wealth and power that when you look at what drives Al-Qaeda, the idea of Islamic fundamentalism, it's the fact that there are so many young people with nothing. I mean, no jobs, no wives, no way to get ahead, and they're frustrated. And so they see this as sort of the new communism, a way to get ahead, or at least identification and self-worth.
Robert, bring Russia and China into the mix here. Were these two players going to be, and how are they reacting to world events?
Well, they're very different, but they're like the guy that steals your seat on the bus when you get up. China is everywhere. I mean, you go anywhere on this planet. You go to Africa, you go to the most remote parts of the world, and there'll be some smiling Chinese businessmen in cheap suits, and they'll be fishing, mining. I mean, it's amazing how much business and how much control. I mean, Afghanistan, while we're fighting a war in Afghanistan, they just went in and won the bid on the biggest copper mine there, and part of that's building a railroad. And so they're strategically expanding their influence using business. Russia's like the drunk guy in a bar who challenges to a fight and then passes out and forgets that he challenges you to a fight. They are always doing something rather bizarre, whether it's, you know, saying that they needed to rescue people in Georgia and take over chunks of the country, or forget that they gave Chechnya its freedom and then go in and invade it. I mean, I think they took claim to almost the entire Arctic Sea just for the hell of it. They're trying to get back to the old Soviet-sized model, but they're run by oil. And as long as oil is worth something, they'll do okay. But as soon as oil collapses, or we get cheaper sources of it, they won't be that powerful a bear.
How did China just do what they've done over the years? How did they get into these areas? How did they build up their economy? How did they do this right under us?
Well, a couple of things. One is they understand the idea of Tai Chi, that if you push against somebody, they push back. So why not just gently go around them,
yeah,
you know, and without being bellicose? Secondly, they have a lot of people there, so they can export a lot of cheap labor. They can make things very cheaply. And, you know, sooner or later, you're going to win a lot of business around the world. You're going to be able to mine things, make things, ship things. And then thirdly, they are able to command. Don't forget, they're a communist country. They can command that their people only have two children. They can they can tear down entire cities and build entirely new ones. You know, you can't do that here. So they have all the economic impetus of the old robber baron years in America, where you could just build a railroad across the country. You know, one guy could build a railroad, or one person could own all the oil. But they're slowly becoming an affluent society, so they'll stop being that cheap, and they'll stop being that efficient, and people won't be able to just order people around, you know, and they'll become a first-world country.
How did they become so efficient and the Russians did not?
You know, it almost sounds racist, but Russians do something very well, and they don't do other things very well. And the Chinese will try and try and try and get it right. I mean, look at the Japanese. Look how long it took them to control certain markets.
Right.
And the Chinese are doing the same thing. They're watching and waiting, and they're taking their time, and they're failing, and then they're succeeding. They don't have the same economic model that we do. I mean, if you want to create a Chinese car, you can copy whatever car you want, or you can invite GM to come in and build a car, and then you can kick them out and build it yourself. Very interesting. I mean, the military and business are the same thing in China. Imagine if a soldier went into a factory and told workers how to build something, didn't care about patents or copyrights or whatever, and had slave labor building it. You know, you could be very competitive and you could make a lot of mistakes.
If there were a war today between China and Russia, who would win?
I think China, hands down. You got to remember, the Russians make a lot of noise and they bang their chest a lot, but I don't really remember them winning a war.